Hey there, welcome everybody to MSP Tutor, the first episode of MSP Tutor. Yeah, I got Matt Lee with me. Matt, what's up, man?
Man, I'm excited to be here. This is really cool. I'm glad you're doing this. Anybody creating content and trying to educate is good in my book, man. I'm happy to be here.
Well, thank you very much. So for those of you joining us live, the premise is simple. I'm gonna ask Matt to teach us about running tabletop exercises. If you guys have questions, please pop them into the chat. We'll do our best to get to them. Matt, I'll kind of field all those, so don't feel like you have to try and keep an eye on that. But I kind of want to just dive in and let's just get a quick background. Like, why should people trust you as the cybersecurity expert know-it-all? Right.
Well, they shouldn't. First off, I'm not an expert know-it-all. I'm a expert student, I would say. I continue to learn and grow. And I think that's the nature of it, right, Steve? Like, it really is. We are practitioners for a reason. We should be practicing and also practicing. And this goes hand in hand with what we're about to talk about today. But my background, I do have a few letters after my name. I do collect certifications. But ultimately, it started for me as an MSP, right? I lived in that life, and I got punched in the face really hard. My eyes used to point and, you know, straight, and then now they do not. And Mark Jordan can actually speak towards some of those years in my life as we kind of lived them a little bit together. But ultimately, I've been a cybersecurity nerd for a long time. In fact, Mark Jordan and I were in a hacking club together for our company. Our MSP actually had a hacking club. It was kind of fun. Matt Topper demonstrated, I think, proxy not log on with just curl, just to show it to people so people could understand. It was fantastic. I want to talk about tabletop exercises, and I want to talk about, the why. But my background is that, you know, not only did we live one as a mass entity, but also after that, we ran incident response for our, you know, centrally for all of our offices and their clients. And so we ended up having, you know, 60 some odd named incidents we went through. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of commonalities. There's a lot of failures that you see in that same regard. But ultimately, I think it's the practice that is the most commonly missed. I'll also say, Steve, when I talk in front of people all year, and it ends up being thousands and thousands of MSPs, and I ask people a simple question, and I close my eyes now because I just got tired of getting nauseous when I asked this question. But I said, okay, I'm going to close my eyes. Raise your hands if you, and I'm going to do this experiment right now for anybody watching. Raise your hands if you have an incident response plan that you've tested, that you've worked through in a tabletop in the last year, that actually goes down to the operational practices for your clients. If they were to get individually hit, what's your decision-making tree? What are you going to do? And I tell people in the audience, I pretend like their hands are up, but my wife sits in the audience and they're never up. And it's never up, right? You have very little limited. So that's the why and what I hope to bring to this. I will also say that in our world, Matt Topper ran the tabletop exercises for the former entity I was at. But Steve, that's kind of my why. I also have an online game I built with somebody else for incident response. I guess those are a few bullet points, maybe.
Very cool. All right. So you said that we should have an incident response plan and we should test it. And so without getting into the weeds, like, how does one build an incident response plan?
Right. I think it starts with this process, right? Like, when you think about it, what is an incident response plan, Steve? Just give me your gut crack at what is an incident response plan.
I would assume it's the plan of action of something happened, so these are the steps we need to take to either to identify, resolve, and prevent that from happening again in the future.
And maybe not the latter, right? I hope the latter, but maybe not, right? Think of active shooter or other things. Incident response doesn't just tie to cyber. Now, we're going to focus on it from a cyber perspective, but there are physical aspects, right? There's other things that can be tested as an incident response tabletop, or as something you have to respond to. But I think you hit it well. I'm responding to something, and right. I want to plan for it. Why? Why would we want to plan, Steve? Why do we want a list of the things we should do during an incident?
I guess because, one, you need to make sure that nothing goes unnoticed. And two, I seem to work better under pressure when I know what needs to be done. Because when something goes wrong and I don't have like a list of all the things that I'm supposed to do, yeah. I'm going to screw something up and I'm going to miss not just one, but like three or four items on that list.
Exactly. Yeah. And one of the things that comes to that is really the emotional state you're in during something like that, right? Mm-hmm. Imagine you're getting that call that your number one revenue client is down. They don't know what happened. They're panicking. They're calling you on every phone. Like, you're going to have something to rely on to make sure that you do the right things, that you say the right things, that you don't say the wrong things, that you are prepared. So an incident response plan is just that. It is that guidebook, right? And if you go to Checklist Manifesto, right, is a book for referencing this. But also if you think about just a pilot that is actually flying a plane, they have a checklist that says if the left engine fails, here's what you do. If you do this, 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 and this, do this. If you do this, 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 and this. And so those are there to save from the panic, to do exactly like you said, Steve, right? Like to make life where you know that your next iterative step will be doing this or that to that point. So, okay, so that is kind of the what is an incident response plan. So when you ask the question of how do I go about building one, you start with that premise. You think about a scenario and you write what are those things that we need to do, right? And it also gets into why I think there's a lot of different types of tabletop exercises that we'll end up talking about today. And this started, I'll give a nod to Matt Topper. Matt Topper, myself, and Matt Topper over at ConnectWise, myself, and Tony Miller at Integris, we're all sitting out on a balcony about a year ago, and we realized, A, it's the first time that even though we'd worked together for 2 years, it's the first time we'd ever been in the same room together. It was interesting. But we were talking about Matt's talk on tabletop exercises and tried to come up with what are those different types of tabletops that somebody might want to do, right? One that I came up with is, right, the hearts and minds, getting people invested, getting people to understand what we're trying to do as a company and an entity. There's ones that test the tactical, you know, technical components of like my incident response plan. Like, I'm going to call this tree. Does that tree exist? I'm going to make sure that we can email on this platform. Is that functional? Can we reach out and talk to Bill? Or you might simulate Steve not being here and unable to do his part. Can somebody else function in that regard? Do we have failover? Do we have those kind of things? That's more like tactical, operational. And so if putting those together, when you come up with a scenario and walk through it, you could come up with the challenges that are missing in an IR plan. You could even write one from scratch just to say, first thing we should do, maybe we should contact our attorney. Maybe we should contact insurance. Maybe we should then do containment efforts. You can then kind of walk through those simulatively. Does that help at least as to kind of how you would begin to get an incident response plan together?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the thing that I don't understand is there are so many different types of incidents that could happen.
Yeah.
Even if we think about cybersecurity, like it could be my PSA got hacked, my RMM got hacked.
Thanks for giving people trauma on this call. So it's cool.
my office manager got phished. There are so many different things that could happen. So is this like, we have an incident response plan that is able to cover all of these
different things? That's a great question. You know, ideally, would it be perfect if you had every single checklist? Yeah, it'd be freaking awesome. If you had a scenario that you've walked through, that you have planned, that you have lists of what the next steps are. But yeah, thank you, Mark. Me too, buddy. But when you think about it, and let's go teacher mode. Can I share my screen real quick?
Yeah, please.
Let's go ahead and go through CIS. So Center for Internet Security, Critical Controls, Top 18 Critical Controls. This is a visualization project that I've worked on with a whole bunch of people from the community to break down the taxonomy of the controls. So this will be released at Beyond. But for now, this is what we're going to work from. The reason I bring this up is your question asks, like, can we plan for everything? Well, in CIS, the only IG1 or first group control to be done for incident response planning is just designating people to manage incident handling. That literally is the first thing. Like, literally, who's responsible? I designate Steve Taylor because I don't want to designate Matt Lee anymore. But who's responsible, right? Why? Because you need someone to be responsible for coordination, documentation, incident response, and recovery efforts. That's it. So why do they make a decision maker first, Steve? Why is the first argument just to have a DM?
Why?
Yeah, why just have a decision maker first? What's why does that need to happen first?
Because somebody needs to be responsible.
And they can make those decisions for those various scenarios, right?
Yeah.
If you think about it, it's that first designation that helps the human element cover this. And you're going to find, when you look at Sunil Yu's cyber defense matrix, on the right side, way right of boom, which is where incident response happens, it's all human, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yes, the plans will have some componentry of that. Like, you might have a ransomware playbook. You might have an all-clients compromised playbook. You might have a PSA. Like, you could do those things, but they're probably going to come through playing out these incidents, right, or scenario. Okay. The next piece that's the next IG1 is just having contact information for reporting incidents, like ISAC, law enforcement, cyber insurance provider, attorney, internal staff, right? Other stakeholders, relevant government agencies, law enforcement. So when you think about what they're saying now in this other IG1 control and safeguard is, hey, like have the ability to report this stuff, right? So the first one is have a human. Second one's have the ability to report this stuff. The third one is... establish and maintain an enterprise process for reporting incidents. So you haven't heard anything about planning an incident down to detail yet, have you? Right? You've only heard have a person. You've only then heard have a place to contact. And then last being have a process for people to report, like have a mechanism for reporting time frame. Like, when should I say something to people? Report personnel. Like, who should I say something to? Steve Taylor already said that. That's who my designate is. We're going to send that. So when you think about a tabletop, I hope you can imagine what's already building. I'm going to want to make sure that my employees know we're going to contact Steve, if that's the answer, right? I want to make sure my employees know who's in charge and what their role is. And if you get breaking this down, you'll get into roles like communications owner, tech lead, right? You get into those type of people and personas that start to exist. So I don't want to, like you said, we don't get too in the weeds about it, but I do want to get to the why we're doing tabletops, right? Because 17.5 goes into key roles and responsibilities. But tabletop exercises come into play in 17.7 and I think arguably 17.8. What I mean is 17.7 says conduct routine incident response exercises, right? Plan and conduct routine. And it says annually or at a minimum, right? And they want to do three things. It needs to test communication channels. Like, how are we going to come? And I think Mark will remember, we had like ham radio plans as a tertiary method of communication. Like, we went a little nuts into the comms plans a smidge. But then decision-making, like how is the Steve Taylor going to make decisions in this? Like, what are those decisions to be made? To your point, when the checklist comes out, is it call insurance first, call the attorney first? What does that checklist say when you're reading it, right? And then the last piece is workflows. Does Steve's ability to execute get hindered because Mark Jordan's not available, right? You start getting into those types of things. So if you think about what is a tabletop, I hope just from this conversation, it's building that there's ways we can take a tabletop, and they don't have to be overly complex, and I'll show you all here in just a few minutes. Okay, so the last piece I'll bring as the why is conduct post-incident reviews. It says, I want you to conduct after an incident, so after punched in face, I want you to conduct a review. And I want you to identify any lessons learned. And what are my follow-up actions? Like, maybe Steve needs another Steve, or maybe there needs to be a second Mark, right? And so when you start thinking about it, you can start learning from that. Well, aren't there two ways, Steve, to learn? You can learn by doing reviews after getting punched in the face, or you could simulate getting punched in the face. And you start now.
I would much rather simulate getting punched in the face than actually getting punched in the face.
Yeah, I might start some fights here, but it's like wrestling versus, oh, never mind, sorry, boxing. Anybody? Okay, let me trigger somebody. No, but for real, right? You don't want to actually get punched in the face. And so simulating it, doing 17.7, if you do it right, you can walk through and say, oh, gosh, I didn't even realize that when we wanted to go call Zoom and ask them to pull us off SSO so that we could use that as an out-of-band communication platform, that they don't do that on Saturdays and on Tuesdays. Or, right, whatever that might be, you can learn those lessons as if you're walking through, depending on how real you get in that simulation and how actual you get into that simulation, you can learn a lot of things from it, right, hopefully. Just like, why do you walk through and do a rehearsal of a major stage production, if anybody's ever been in theater? Because you're going to learn stuff. You're going to go, no, that can't be there. We're going to step over it. We're going to have to change the way this is laid out, right? You start getting into that operational walkthrough. So, okay, I hope I've built enough of a case of the why, which wasn't our intention today, and yet I've taken 14 minutes to do it, so I suck.
No.
But
no, this is good. I've learned something. So, honestly, like, I've never had to deal with this because I stopped doing MSP stuff before cybersecurity got really out of hand, right? So
2018-ish.
Yeah. So like I haven't had really to worry about doing this type of stuff. When I hear incident response plan, my immediate thought is I have to plan for everything. But yeah. What I'm hearing is I don't have to plan for everything. I just need to have the right people and processes in place. That first. Way we can make decisions yes. on the fly as something happens.
And really my intent in the beginning, that's a great summation to that point. Now, I don't want anybody to say, Matt said I'll never plan for everything. That, my point, though, is as you do these simulations and as you get punched or see people get punched, if you do this right, you set yourself up to write what those things need to be, right? As you're doing a review of what happened, you're going, hey, maybe we should put a step in here that we do actually remove tokens and session lifetime tokens from the Microsoft identities as part of our containment effort, because we clearly didn't do that last time and the threat actor signed back in. Or maybe we should, does that make sense? So you're going to learn yeah. those scenarios through sucking at it. But the goal would be to try it out so you don't learn the ones that you created, right? You want to learn those native lessons that way. And if you do it right, Steve, you're going to build those other playbooks, right? By playing the game, unfortunately. And hopefully by simulating playing the game. Hopefully you can be accurate enough in that. And I want to bring us to that next point, right? A lot of people yeah. overthink how magical these tabletops must be. And I don't know if you know this, but CISA actually has, the government agency, actually has some CTEPs or some tabletop exercise packages that they've pre-prepared. And as one's reading that, Steve, you'd have to go, you know what? I bet these are amazing. They're very detailed. They give all the roles to everybody. Here's your role and playing card. Here's your, and there are these elaborate things. They really aren't, right? Let me share with you what one of these looks like, right? So this is the module on, and I'll zoom in for everybody's viewing purposes. This is the module on vendor phishing. So this is a supply chain module talking about a vendor getting phished. And to your point, this is like a scenario. It's one we might play through. Right? It gives you handling instructions. It gives you exercise overview, like, and some general information. And then the modules you're going to play through, as well as some discussion questions, case studies, attacks, and facts, like information for the game. So first off, they give you the ability to edit, like, what your traffic light protocol be on this, tabletop. If you edited it, put in some real sensitive information about your organization, you might change the TLP on it, or traffic light protocol. But in this case, you name your title, you say here's the date, you talk about the exercise schedule, right? Facilitated time-based, discussion-based tabletop exercise. And so it gets into and says scenario. A threat actor compromises a third-party vendor and uses established trust relationships to target the organization with phishing emails, right? So I'll just pause on that. So because you already trust, Steve Taylor, and Steve gets compromised and sends me emails, then they're gonna hope that because it's coming from him, it's validable from him, that if it's targeted well, that I will respond to that, right? And so mm-hmm. that's what they're doing. But additionally, then attackers overwhelm this organization's forward-facing web servers, right? So it sounds like more of a targeted attack against this victim organization. Exfiltrate employee and customer personally identifiable information, or PII, and then post for sale on the dark web. A cybersecurity researcher's post about the incident is affecting your organization, attracts media attention. So, like, that's it. They even have a spot for exercise sponsor. I digress. But anyways, so the point is, like, that's it. That's all they give. And then they walk you through your roles, right? Your players have an active role in discussing and performing their regular roles. So, like, come play you. So in this case, that might be your service manager, right? That might be your team lead for, this particular IA. That might be your core services person, like Mark Jordan, let's say. You know, you might have those different individuals in the game, and they're going to play as themselves, is what they're saying. So, Steve, does this at least start to make sense about how simple these type of exercises are to kind of go through?
Yeah.
So. This one's created. It's not all that specific to an MSP, though, right? Because this is uh-huh. governed at like a single entity. But we'll get into that in a minute. So it says, hey, we're going to hold this in an open, no-fault environment. We're going to respond to the scenario using your knowledge of existing plans, if they exist, right? Uh-huh. Like, they may not to that point. And that's okay, because you'll have to figure that out and go, we don't have a plan for this. Okay, let's get this figured out. Okay, we don't have a plan for this. Okay, let's get this figured out, right? Decisions are not precedent setting and may not reflect your organization's final position on a given issue. The point is, like, you're just walking through this scenario and you might make bad decisions that you then get corrected on and your organization needs to change things on. The scenario has been developed in collaboration with subject matter experts and exercise planners from your organization, right? So that's the conversation they're giving to set the stage. So then they just go into day one. They're like, day one, DHS as an infrastructure security agency releases an alert detailing spear phishing, right? That's what this is when someone's doing very targeted phishing with information that utilizes phishing with trust. Phishing with trust uses established trusted relationships. One early one I saw of this, just as a side tangent, was there was a certain nation state that was compromising universities and then sending emails to a bunch of the MSPs we had acquired, right? So all the different former owners of the MSPs we had acquired. Coming from a .edu, they had hoped that that physics director of physics department at a certain college in California would not be blocked. And they were right. It got through a couple layers. I only caught it because of some API-based email inspection that was being done for incidents. But anyways, short story. So that's what they're setting up. They're just setting the stage. Steve, we're doing a role-playing game, right? We're walking through as a DM or game master, if you will, and just talking it through. Yeah. So then we go day 10. So, you know, day one, they talk about this phishing campaign. And then as this organization, day 10, 100 users across four business units of your third-party vendors receive spear phishing. So they're now setting the stage. This is unbeknownst to you, but it's now happening, right? Ronald, the tabletop materials that we're talking about here, those are available from CISA's webpage. And I'll show that to you here. Let me grab that and drag it over. So that's actually available from the CISA.gov. Resources, tools, resources, cybersecurity scenarios, and they also have other scenarios, right? So they have physical scenarios, they have a few other different various types, but this is the CISA one word for word right now. Okay, so day 10, 100 users. Day 40, personnel from your organization receive emails from Bob at your third-party vendor with a PDF. Steve, does that sound like something good? It's about to happen from this conversation.
Sounds fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, we should click that. That's happening. Bob, we trust
I usually
Bob.
Open all attachments.
Yeah, oh, me too, man. I like to open them right up in front of everybody. Mm-hmm. No, it's terrible. But the point is, it's coming from Bob. You already trust Bob. You've gotten emails and PDFs from Bob all the time. What's delineable today? Right? Yeah. And then 2 days later, during a quarterly system audit, a system admin at your third-party vendor notices weird activity on their network. It appears Bob's communications from his computer to this unknown external server. They're like, what the heck is going on? Steps are taken to remove Bob's system and do some containment, and remediation is conducted. Administrators believe they have cleaned their network. I would stop right now and say, okay, let's talk about a discussion point. And that's what they've done, right? So I got super triggered as a leader, and then there we are. Then we get into, you would stop, and me and Steve would just then talk about, and we can go back to just you and I, and say, okay, Steve, would your organization receive the alert mentioned? Like, would you even get a call from your third party? Steve, do you know if, let's make up some company out there, let's call them PSA Zero or something, right? Some new PSA. Would you get a call from that PSA if they figured out an internal person's machine had been compromised? Do you think that would play out, yes or no?
Hell if I know.
Yeah, no, zero chance. How do we deal with that? How do we manage that? What should we do as an organization? You know what we should do? We should write down a note that says, we don't believe we'd get this. Can we have somebody out of this team take an action item as a to-do to reach out to our major suppliers that hold sensitive information and ask them, do we have a plan and a path? And if they don't, let's notate that and denote what our next steps need to be. Are you understanding the value of a tabletop and just even asking just that question and what that can lead towards as an action item?
Yeah, and honestly, what I'm hearing is, as part of our incident's response plan, we need to verify that our vendors have an incident response plan. And if they don't, then maybe they shouldn't be our vendors?
Whoa, bro. I mean, you're not wrong. Yeah, you're not wrong. I think that's a real important thing, right? Like, do you at least care enough? And I hate saying this too, Steve, because if we pointed those fingers out and pointed those fingers down to our clients and said, hey, I wish they'd have an incident response plan, we must realize that we do not either. In fact, when I've actually opened my eyes, Steve, it's less than 1% that raise their hands. So I would wager your vendors probably have more of an incident response plan than most people that are MSPs and service providers. Maybe I'm wrong, like it's that table, prove me wrong. But I believe that's the case, right? So let's make sure as we point those fingers, we point internally as well, is the only piece. And that then brings us with a little more humility to the situation. But yeah, I would agree with you. And I would say things to your customers. If your MSP doesn't have an incident response plan, and more specifically doesn't have a way to think about your incident and hasn't talked to you about your incident response plan, you probably should have a different MSP. at this stage in the game. So, yeah. Okay, I'm off my box. I'm going to fall off my soapbox and break my neck here, bro. Okay, so let's continue down this real quick simulation, right? So now we're asking people to talk through questions. So if you were an MSP building a tabletop, you might come up with a scenario like, hey, one of our number one customers calls in and has a ransomware. What do we do first? Right? And then you just stop and say, okay, if I don't have a plan, what do we do first? In my mind, that's at least, if you want my opinion, these are my opinions, I might try to decide, did I cause that or not? Why? Mm-hmm. Can you imagine why I might want to decide, did I as an MSP cause that?
Am I on the hook for millions of dollars or not?
And do I need to call my insurance provider and get a case started? And do I need to deal with my perhaps E&O or my own cyber if that's possible in that scenario if one of my systems was compromised? So you have to actually figure out that piece of it as well. So what I would think of is like, okay, we're going to simulate that we've walked through that, made that decision. It's the client only. Now, let's go. What do we do with that client? Okay, do they have insurance? Do we even know if they have insurance? Maybe we need to write down if they have cyber insurance. Right.
Now we've got a new thing that we've learned we need to document when onboarding new clients.
And that's the point of this, is if you walk through these scenarios and you do it in earnest, and it doesn't matter how perfect the scenario is, you're going to learn stuff. If you listen and ask questions about that, and if you're guided well, right, I'll give you that. You might need some discernment if you've never been through any of these things. But we'll break to that here in a bit, because I actually have done something that we're doing for free around just that to guide you through your first kind of tabletop exercise and example. But these CISA ones are great because it gets into, okay, what actions would you need to take based on this alert? So let's say you did get, back in our game, you did get information that Bob's computer at this third-party vendor you're using, right, PSA0, that Bob's computer was compromised. And what would you do? Like, Steve, what would you do if you were placed in that scenario?
I honestly hide under my desk until it goes away.
Okay. I'm not tapping you as the IR lead anymore, Steve. I'm going to have to pull you back. Just a skosh. My thoughts, right, would be if I got an alert that my vendor was compromised and they just told me that Bob was compromised, I would start doing things like maybe digging into our email and seeing who Bob emailed or communicated with at our organization, right? That might be a practical step to take.
I guess my first step would probably be to like maybe lock him out of his accounts.
Well, Bob's not your employee, right? So Bob's a third-party employee. Yeah. And you've just been notified by this third party that Bob, and do you see how these tabletops go? We're literally playing one right now. So I just want you to know, I've dragging us in and out of the fourth wall for this a few times. But you think about that, right? So Bob has emailed maybe one of your employees. And so I would now say, do we have a process when we receive information about threats, right, or potential threats, do we have a process to dig in and look at our attack surface and what happened, right? And I think that's a question I would ask as an MSP. What do? You have a way you're doing that? Is it ticket type? Is it something you have a team for? So you use that human element, you know, 17.1, just to sign Steve and make him make that decision. Mm-hmm. You know, how are you handling that? Anybody in the chat, how are you handling that? If you got that alert, what would you do?
You know, I think sometimes the best thing might be to just pick up the phone and call someone. Okay. So let's say hold on a second.
Well, you roll a dice on that phone someone, and because he's actually emailed about 1,000 people, they are not taking phone calls. They've sent out the one alert that says they know Bob was compromised. They've told you to delete any emails, like...
Gotcha.
They're not going to take your call, so your dice roll wasn't high enough.
Oh boy! All right. So then, okay. Log into my Exchange server admin portal and run a search and see who all in my organization has Bob emailed.
Yeah, there you go. That's a great call out, Mark Jordan. I'll answer your question as well if you'll pop that on the screen. He said, a question we got a good point for, and Matt's going to laugh about this one, is how do you keep from going down the rabbit holes in Infinium during a tabletop? You literally just watched what you should do to do that. If you keep it fun and reference the fact that you're being a game master and that you're doing this to simulate, you can take hours of conversation and end them with simple dice roll conversations.
There you go.
And so I don't know that we planned that, but Steve, that was beautiful because it did bring out the answer to Mark's question, is that you got to cut it off. You got to keep it focused on what you're trying to outcome. And that is why if you look in the CISA document, it does say, what are the things we hope to get out of this? Mm-hmm. One of them was an analysis of our supply chain risk, right? What is that risk of Bob to us? How do we deal with it? You know, one of the other things, Steve, so to your point, we're digging in and seeing, you know, did Bob email anybody? And maybe we discover that he did, right? What capabilities does our MSP have to deal with Bob's email? Do we have any ability to look back at what happened? Do we have any ability to see who clicked on the PDF? Do we have anybody that we want to dig into and start? And what you've really described is the beginning of what? Steve, what is that the beginning of? If you find that, say, one person has clicked and you've received all these emails from Bob in your organization, what are you actually calling that now?
I can't think of the term. It's on the tip of my tongue, man.
It's the very beginning of our conversation. It's an incident.
Oh,
it's the beginning of an incident, okay. Right? We now know
I was
that
thinking,
something...
I was going much further.
That's all right. I sent you there. No worries. But the point is, this is the beginning of an incident. So you're now seeing something being defined from an event, potentially to an incident. We think someone clicked. We have information. We're gathering information. We're trying to decide what our risk is. We're trying to decide, do we have any impact? We're trying to decide what a containment might be if there is any necessary. And so we're seeing. And so the question I might take away out of 1B is simply, does my organization have an ability to dig in and see what happened if they do believe something has become more than just an event? Do you even have a definition of what an event is versus an incident? So I know we're going through a tabletop, but Steve, we've already got four notes through 1A and 1B for an organization to look at and add to either their incident response plan about who I contact first, right? Or add to notes about what systems and things I might need to do in a process or a procedure after that. All right, so questions so far. I know it's like drinking from a fire hose, but any questions there, Steve, before we keep going?
Not yet.
Okay, so this is this type of scenario. And so now they're asking you to finish going, what's our threat intelligence do we have? How would we get that information? How do employees even report it? Like, let's imagine, you know, one of our awesome employees, Steve Taylor, got that email and goes, this seems fishy from Bob, bro. I'm not clicking. Do you know how to report that? And so these are the type of questions we're going to ask in that scenario, right? Do you know how to report a phishing incident in your organization right now?
Personally, yes. I right-click on the email and hit report as phishing, I believe.
Exactly right, bro. And that's my point is when you're doing these tabletops, you're going to want to shout and go, Sally, Bill, how do you report an incident in phishing? Oh, yeah, no problem. My name's Steve Taylor, and I just right-click on the thing and do it like all day, bro. Right? Like, that's it. That's what you want to test. So that's one of the things you want in your incident response tabletop is like asking those type of things. And that's what this one guides us down. Okay. So does your department conduct phishing self-assessments? Yes, of course, right? We're paying for one of those services. Does your organization provide basic cybersecurity awareness training? How's it provided? So you can see how this is nothing all that fancy. We're just guiding you through some questions because you got people in the right moment and feel of this, of doing this, right? You're putting people in this tabletop experience, just like a role-playing game. So then it goes on and sets the next day and says, okay, day 44. Your organization's forward-facing websites begins receiving high volumes of data on its web pages, right? And so you can see how this is building, right, Steve? They're just giving you more information. You're in an incident. You now realize you have problems. You now somebody clicked on it. You now know, right, this will be a good throwback to to your brethren, right? Did someone within your organization monitor the dark web? Do you have information on credentials? Are you doing things to look for threats and vulnerabilities to your organization? Okay, day 47, local and national media. Okay, so this is one scenario. Let's go back and just talk now for a minute. All right, so I hope everybody that's watching can at least see this is a type of a scenario you could literally just pick up, bring in your people and use. The challenge with it is the scenario needs to be real to a thing that you can identify with, in my opinion. So if you're building at home, if you're building your own incident response scenario for yourself, make it real. One of the things that I did, so I was asked to build an incident response tabletop game about 3 years ago, Steve. And so Ethan Tancredi from Huntress and myself got together and planned it. I came up with the concept of the game structure, and Ethan came up with the math and made it actually right because he's the smart one. I'm not very smart. So anyways, we put this thing together, and it was a simulation of what we had happen with Voldemort. Mark, sorry if you want to close your ears. I'm going to touch on Voldemort a smidge for a sec, so sorry. Love you. But we took what we acquired a company called Voldemort in Eastern Texas that got compromised by Soda No Kibi or Our Evil Ransomware Gang, and their RMM was used to detonate ransomware across 1,200 machines, not once, not twice, but three times over the course of a year and a half, of which we bought them and took the last one on the chin. Every employee quit. Every company fired us. Ultimately, I think one came back 2 years later. But essentially, Steve, we bought the shell of a $1 million company. And so I took that experience. Now, I hyperbolized it. I added some things to it to make it more painful. But I really took the origins of some of my PTSD and created a playthrough game of that. And
this is a real thing?
Yeah.
That really happened to you?
Yes. Thanks. Yes.
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
Yeah. So we took that and made it into a game so that people can experience it. And the intention is, and this goes back to Topper and I, the intention is to give people hearts and minds and get them bought into a scenario that they can really passionately, like, kinesthetically feel, right? Like, I watched your face as I talk about it. Yeah, Mark, it sure did. but taking that and saying, what if this happened? What if I was a $3 million MSP? Now, in this case, it was about $1 million. And we had a lot of arms of support, right? Because it was a small company we had acquired. So we had lots of people that could come help. In this scenario we've created, you don't have that, right? So it's a $3 million MSP. You have, I think, something like 10 techs. I think you have something like, four admin humans, right? So we lay out that math. And then we had you walk through the scenario. It starts All About Teeth was who we called it the first time. Now Bob Miller came and did something really cool with it, but All About Teeth, and we say, hey, All About Teeth calls in and says they have ransomware, right? Essentially, I mean, we made it play out a little longer. What do you do? And then you ask the MSP to talk about it. Okay, we're going to deal with it. We're going to call their insurance, right? All those good things come up. And then it escalates. Now you get 10 different calls and 20 different clients are calling. And all of a sudden they're calling your cell phone. They can't get through on the main line. You only had this many trunks. They're sending messages in online portals. They're trying to create tickets, but they're being rejected. Your PSA is no longer working, right? We escalated into that kind of scenario because that is what happened, right? The RMM was on all of those systems. It took them all out. You wind up with pulling paper notes and asking people, tribal knowledge. So we set that simulation up just to get the stage set. And then we give people pieces to realize that you now need to wipe and reload every machine, which isn't the scenario that actually played out in our case, but we had to do a bunch of them. But you have to wipe and reload every server, you have to wipe and reload every machine, and you only have 10 techs. How are you going to go around and actually do that? And what does it take? And making you play through every day of that, assigning resources, and then taking little breaks to talk about topics that force you to be in this high state of tension, right, for that whole time, right? It's very stressful for that 3 hours or 4 hours, whatever it is.
Sure.
So we did that in person, and it was really, really well received. Huntress has now run it 3 or 4 times, I guess, in major, like 200-user, 150-user kind of scenario, and walked people through it. And what's great about it is you can bring anybody in. You don't have to know a plan. You don't have to. It's simulative, and it's hearts and minds, and it's exposure-based, right? But mm-hmm. It also makes you walk through some of those questions like what we're talking about over here, but now tied to what would you do if all of your clients were compromised? Do you have a list of all of them? Do you have phone numbers and contact information somewhere? Do you have an out-of-band communication path, right? If your PSA is down, is that the way you stored it, or did you print it? You get into all those things. so anyways, short story is the simulation we made was not very scalable because you had to do it one-to-one, right? It was led in a room and a group exercise. So Bob Miller took that, and he has Global Data Systems in Louisiana, MSP, and he ran it with his ops people, but he changed the client names to his client names, and he made the revenue their revenue, and he made it so that when you're looking at which client I'm going to send a tech to, you're having to make the decision of the one you ended up dating somebody from versus the one you don't really like. And you're having to make these Sophie's choices maybe, and you're having to do things that are very much more poignant and to your own world and your own experience, right? Your people you care about. And then he made it into an online game that we've been facilitating virtual versions of this game at irgame.ai. So Bob Miller turned it into a digital game that we're playing online in Zoom. Once every month, I think we do it at the third Friday or something, or last Friday. I'm not the smart guy. I just show up to talk about cyber. Anyway, so any questions, Steve? Like, because that's at least a way that I've done an incident response game. Did anybody in the audience or you yourself have any questions?
No, man. This has been eye-opening. It makes me wonder, like, gosh, how many MSPs do you think, like a percentage, how many do you think are actually going through and doing this stuff?
I wouldn't put it above one. and I'm not trying to be salacious or negative. I'm genuinely, from a just guesstimate perspective, I would probably say less than 1%. Mark, and you've been in a couple of MSPs now. How many MSPs have you been at that have a an incident response tabletop exercise that they're playing out and doing, let alone an incident response plan?
That's a good question.
Anybody out there? I would wager it's low, Steve, and I'm hoping that changes. I think is probably the biggest room for maturity. MSPs have definitely dealt with incidents. They have definitely dealt with events. In fact, in a lot of cases, I'd wager they've made poor decisions while dealing with that. And you could say, ask me how I know.
I can tell you, team. I know I have.
I have too. Yeah, I'm not throwing shade.
Yeah. And look, I can even think of and this is me with my ADD. I can even think of when I was doing tech director stuff for my church, mm-hmm. and we'd have just weird crap happen on a Sunday, man. It's like Satan's working on us on Sunday. Satan is the IT guy at church, I swear, because every Sunday some weird crap would happen. Like the soundboard would stop working, the speaker would stop working, the internet would go down, like just stupid things. And without the plan in place, without a person in place to kind of field all of these incidents, it was really difficult. And I was making really poor decisions. And the problem was, if I could just be there to be the incident response guy, then it probably would have gone much more smoothly. But I wasn't just the incident response guy. I was also the guy running the soundboard. So yeah. I had to put all of my attention and focus into something that I'm now mixing. I'm live mixing 30 channels in real time. And somebody's in my ear saying, hey, something went wrong. And I'm trying to live mix and process how do we fix this problem all at the same time.
And that is, even in that microcosm, is stressful. It causes prone to failure. It makes the production worse. It makes the response worse. And the answer is checklists, right? Really back to, all right, bro, when that stupid soundboard goes down, it's the far left USB cord. You need to pull it, plug it back in, right? Like you have those procedures, and that's what you need out of your brain. I think that's why the whole purpose of this episode is how to master, incident response tabletop exercises. It's doing them crappily and then doing them better and better and better. And so I think the point is, don't let this perfect be the enemy of good. Just create a little scenario. Get your team together for an hour and say, here's what happened. And if you need ideas for those scenarios, definitely go look at, CISA for those ideas. Or you can take a look at what we're doing for IR game that we're building. It's free. The last piece, though, is how many are doing incident response exercises with their clients? And they don't have to be all that massively in depth, but I mean simply saying, all right, Steve, you have hired me. I'm protecting your church. We're going to talk about what happens on Sundays. And what we're going to do is on Saturday, we're going to get together for 1 hour, and we're going to bring my team, and we're going to get your team, Steve, and we're going to simulate a board failure that you're going to have to deal with. And we're going to walk through that checklist. How many are doing that? What do you think would happen if you started doing just simple 1 hour incident response exercises with your customers? What do you think would come of that if you were doing that, Steve?
Well, I think logically more business is going to come from that if we're doing it right. And let's go down that rabbit hole. They're going to find some things that need to be adjusted.
Yep.
And you're going to say, yeah, we can fix this. We can fix this. This is going to be a project, and this is going to require some additional services that you're not currently paying for.
Yep.
But you can go through, by all means, do what you can do for the client within the scope of your agreement, but make sure your tabletop game is a great sales tool. That sounds shady.
But you're not wrong. I don't want to miss the power of what you're saying too. Here's why. You get to simulate anything you want with that client. In fact, what Bob and I are talking about building next is one that lets me do how you had those stories where you're like, name a noun, name a verb, name your favorite color, and then it does a build your own storybook, right? Like that kind of thing. What if we made one that's name your number one application, tell us how it drives revenue, Talk about the things that are reliant upon that. What are the weakest things around that? And filling that out. And now we give you a canned scenario to run through with your partner to say, hey, it looks like solar wind, or let's not toss shade. Let's say it looks like the thing that runs your concrete trucks, this Trimble All-Track, is down. And since it's down, you can't run concrete and you're having to do something. What are we going to do next? No. We're not talking about Matt. Get it back up. What are you going to do next? Do you have radios? How are you going to make sure that concrete trucks still arrive at that massive pour that you're working on every 32 minutes with this right mix of ash and this right mix of cement and water that have been blended together at the right time to be this level of hardness when they reach here for pressure specs? How are you going to do that and make them answer that? And I walk love through that. Go ahead.
I love that you just talked about cement and you made it sound like you know what you're talking about. I have no idea what words just came out of your mouth.
I actually may have literally gone through this scenario with a concrete manufacturer that has a high pressure spec requirement for the things they're doing. And so if they missed a pour by 6 minutes, it was over. Like they had to repour the whole job. Like it was specific. Yeah, but the point is that if you're walking through that scenario with that Steve Taylor at his end company, you're talking about the church board and you're talking about those things, it's real for them. And you're like, what do you mean that's really possible? No, bro, it's really possible. You have a crappy software that's going to be hard for me to restore. I have to do a whole bunch of stuff. Sorry, it's going to be a bitch. You're going to be down for 3 days. How are you going to deal with it? It forces them to accept the reality of the risk. Right. Mm-hmm. Even if if they don't agree with you, then that's a different story. Right. So we can get into that conversation next. But the point is, you're allowed to be simulative. You're allowed to state that you're being simulative. You're allowed to state how will we protect that? What will we do next? Is this a discussion for HA or DR? Is this a discussion for maybe moving to a different software or provider? Is this a discussion for having operational fail safes? Right. And they do this all the time. Right. Think about it this way. How do they get simulations normally in that world? One concrete truck failed. They couldn't get the job on time, so they built a shop. Then they realized they needed two extra concrete trucks to be able to jump in. Then they needed two extra drivers to be able to do it. Then they understood they needed a different... Does that make sense? Like, they've gone through these things in an operational capacitance. They just haven't been forced to think through these things from a tech and operations capacitance. And that's what, you know, I think is the next stage, is just walking people through their own potential scenarios of the most critical systems. So we're building a canned way to do that, I think, so...
That's really cool, man. So I think what you, the viewer, should take away from this isn't really as difficult or as scary as it seems.
Yeah.
And in fact, even if you were to just sit down with your client and say, hey, let's just talk this out. We don't even have to make like a game. We don't have to write all of these things out. We don't need to have a dungeon master. Let's just talk about, what if your internet went down at the office? You know, like let's just pick a random scenario. It doesn't even have to be, you know, Susie in HR got hacked. Let's just unplug your router and see what chaos happens. Like,
well, and we could also, one of the things that I think is going to be good, and I'm going to play with this in the background, and if it sucks, we won't show it, but if it's good, we will. But I think, Sunil, you and I did a talk together about AI and cybersecurity. And one of the nuggets that came out of that was use AI and generative AI, specifically LLMs, to do things that are non-deterministic, right? Like, don't use a non-deterministic type application to solve something you need deterministic. Like, is that really a bad guy or not? Might not be the best application, but maybe using non-deterministic capabilities in generative AI to say, make me a scenario. And so I'm going to do just that. I'm going to ask OpenAI to make me a tabletop scenario for a small managed services provider serving the small to mid-sized business community. Simulate a supply chain attack that causes all of their clients to be encrypted with ransomware. Please ensure we have a service manager who leads the tech decisions, a CEO who leads personnel and client-facing communications. let's just see what it comes up with, right? Like, the point is, I think generative AI is usually really good for these types of things. So let's just see. Company, TechNet Solutions, a small MSP, Alex Reed, the CEO, Jamie Chin, service manager. TechNet uses a popular third-party solution, SecureFlow, for network monitoring. Like, completely fictitious, right? Unbeknownst to TechNet, another user, SecureFlow's recent software update includes a hidden malicious payload originating from a compromised development. Like, so here's the scenario, initial breach discussion. They should call that incident, not breach, because we don't know it's a breach yet, so bad on you there, OpenAI. Scope of impact, containment efforts, communications, mitigation. I'll have to go through this and see if this is actually valuable or not, because you never know, it's prone to some hallucination.
But, I love that it says there was an incident at 9, and at 9:30 it was detected. Like, in what world is a 30-minute... Oh, I'm sorry, 90-minute.
Yeah, yeah.
But in what world is a 90-minute detection going to happen? Let's be realistic. Oh, well, okay, so finding out everyone got ransomware, that one's pretty quick to detect because all their stuff's locked. But, like, you know, you look at a lot of these supply chain attacks, and it goes unnoticed for months, some of them years.
Yeah, for sure. And to your point, like, from a simulation, like, it goes unnoticed maybe even because the threat actor isn't doing anything with it, right? It could be implanted for a long time, or it could be that it goes unnoticed because they're very good at what they're doing. But so let's see, identification of the threat, scope of impact of 40 SMB clients across various sectors, all reporting system outages. Look at this. Like, they did a great job of building that, actually. Data encrypted, client databases, financial records, operational. Jamie instructs the team to isolate affected systems, disconnect them from internet, and revert to pre-update versions of SecureFlow where possible. Secure backups are identified and checked for integrity. So they're getting into some containment efforts that were made. You can actually pick that apart. Let's see what they get into for questions. Decision making. So they do talk about how should Alex and Jamie prioritize actions? What should be the tone and the content of communications with clients? Good question. What technical barriers might impede the identification of malware and recovery of data? What are the legal implications? Like, so they're giving you some canned stuff. So even though this isn't perfect, I think this is the point I'm trying to make it, and tying in with your point. Go ahead, Steve.
No, it's a great place to start, man. Sorry. I
think we were saying the same thing. I was just saying it's one of those things where don't let perfect be the enemy of good. Just being able to say I walked through and talked about these things and here's what we did out of that should be the target. And maybe coming back to you and I real quick, the biggest thing I want if I'm doing this is really the takeaways, isn't it? Mm. Right? If we think about this, if you do an exercise, the exercise is gone quickly. Whatever's done from that is gone quickly. Even the emotional impact is gone fairly quickly. What lasts? The changes we made, right? Like, that's the goal, hopefully. So if I'm looking, did somebody do a tabletop? What I really want to inspect is, did you make any notes and any changes? If you didn't do those two things, then why pee in a fan, right? Like, you're wasting your time. If you're not going to make changes and realize there's things to improve, then why do it? And yeah, that's what I'm looking for in a successful tabletop, not the scenario.
I've got to say, one, I've never heard the phrase, why pee in a fan?
I mean, and you can imagine it visually, right?
I mean, it's awful.
Well, and people only vision it one of two ways. They're either on the other side of the fan or they're facing the fan. And depending on how your brain works, you're going to be one of those two.
See, both have bad implications. I'm picturing, you know, I've got my fan here. It's blowing on me.
Yeah,
and I'm picturing peeing.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, you're on that.
And now it's blowing back.
Yeah, others might be on the other side of the fan.
But even then, you're still just making a mess, and it's awful.
I
want to go back to something you said. I think you said, don't let perfect be the enemy of good.
Yeah.
And one thing that I've started posting about this month is my own struggles with imposter syndrome, and I think being a perfectionist is almost never a good thing, because
there's arguments both ways, right? Like, I need a perfectionist to say exactly where that rocket's going to go and what my acceleration sub G is around the moon. But like, I need somebody that can answer that. Like, I need that. But in the same breath, if you are wanting to work in the bell curve, if you're wanting to work within that 85% of possibility, yeah, being a perfectionist is a bitch.
Right. So where I'm at is, when I think of what MSPs do on a day-to-day basis, I think that you don't necessarily need to be a perfectionist.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a perfectionist to go through a checklist. Let me tell you, the number of computers I set up at when I ran my MSP and forgot to set up their freaking printer because I never had a checklist. So having a checklist doesn't make you a perfectionist.
Right.
It just makes you not forget something. It
makes you repeatable.
So yeah. Simple as a printer. How do I forget the printer? It's because I don't want to print.
Because we're humans, unfortunately.
It's because I don't think we need to print things. It's the year 2024, and we have iPads and e-readers and everything else.
I haven't printed something in a very hot minute, and it's usually some old government thing that I have to deal with, right?
The last thing I printed was yesterday. It was the form I need my son to take and give to the picture guy at
exactly
soccer.
Yeah, exactly.
So
big takeaways. Go ahead, sorry, Steve.
Oh, I was gonna say, but all that to say, you know, whether it's documentation or running an incident response plan or running a tabletop exercise, you don't need to wait for it to be perfect. Make a version, run it, and see what goes wrong. You know, there's a difference between I didn't document every little nook and cranny of this thing, and I'm not ready to release this documentation out to the rest of the people on my team, screwing things up for everyone. I documented what I could, and there's probably something missing, but the next time somebody runs through this, they'll fix it.
Well, and there's the piece you actually are saying is, don't be a perfectionist, be an iterist, right? Yes. Like iterate, find problems and iterate. That's how you get towards perfection, right? Is iterating, and it's how you deal with change and delta and, oh, they changed the UI or they changed the way this functions or flows. And so you start getting into that conversation. So you got to be an iterist. And the other thing I'll leave people with is going through these exercises and being brutally honest of the things that need to be improved, even if you cannot fully improve them between now and the next exercise, is how you actually show reasonableness, right? That's how you show, how would anybody else have handled this? If you went through an exercise and we had 27 things to do and I needed to do 14 of them this month and the rest of it, right? Like, you're showing the journey. You're giving the iteration. You're showing that lack of perfection. You're showing that transparency and trust as you're growing that capability. Right. And as you iterate and you show that you got better next time, you had better answers. And now we did have a comm plan. And now we did have ways to pull this off our SSO. And now we did. And you can show those iterations. That's how you get better. It's like roguelike in real life.
Yeah.
So I digress.
So one last question I see from the audience here is, how do you recommend we bill our clients if they're interested in running a tabletop exercise? Yeah. Is this something that we should bill hourly, flat rate? New statement of work. My opinion would be maybe you don't bill this because, like I said earlier, this is a great way for you to uncover untapped revenue and for you to come up with new project work. So maybe this is something you just do for them.
I lend to follow that side of things too, in the sense that I think it's definitely a sales discussion disguised as an incident response tabletop that also meets the statutory need. But that said, it depends. And I get to give the most security answer ever, and I know I suck for this, but it depends. It'll depend on how your all-in seat price is structured. It'll depend on what you're actually finding in the commoditization of what you're already doing as an MSP. Right? I firmly believe we're seeing direct commoditization of what our value statements are. And if you don't believe me, we used to manage an exchange server under the same seat price. And now we don't. Now we have Office 365. If you don't believe that is erosion of that value prop that's being filled in with other things like VCIO and VCISO and even these conversations, I think you're crazy. So I do believe that I would lean towards making this something you do as a part of your product. But that said, you might charge this as a pro serve. If you want to get really engaged, bring in lots of people and really get simulative and really plan and put time into it, it might be a pro serve engagement. You might charge for it. But if you're doing a one-to-many where you bring in 9 companies and walk through some simulation and pretend like it's going on and walk them through that way in a one-to-many scale where it's not all that hard to do, maybe you don't, right? And so I think it'll come down to the level of granularity and in their world you're getting. And even in that, Steve, I'd say I think there's things I'm trying to accomplish when doing that. if I'm walking through that and saying, hey, maybe this flat file database that's terrible and I has to have all, you know, sharing permissions open to everybody in the world might be a risk to you and your organization. Maybe we're going to talk about that and simulate its failures so that we can get you to do the things you need to do and switch to a different platform potentially operationally. So there could be reasons you're doing it. And you'll have to take that as an organization and make that decision. But Steve, I'd probably say if I was forced to make a decision, I would probably make these a one-hour engagement that I make free that help me drive those sales purposes, to your point. And I offer them as such and tie it to frameworks and safeguards for sure.
And to piggyback off that, if you've got a client that says, I want to do one of these every month or every quarter, then maybe...
That might be an MRR, right? That might be a recurring revenue model of some sort.
Yeah, sure. but you could always offer one to your existing customers. And like you said, you know, it's a sales thing that is disguised as a tabletop exercise.
Because, and also meet statutes, right? Because you're now starting to say, yes, I did 17.7 and 8.
Yes.
Right? Like with my client. Yeah. So it's not just that. It's actually saying, and maybe you do it as a way to protect yourself, Steve, right? I know we're over time and I've got another meeting coming. But, you know, one of the things you think about is, maybe you do it as a way to say, here's how I'm going to contact you during an incident. Here's what I'm going to do to isolate that machine. Here's what I'm... Maybe you want to have those conversations, and that's the way you have those conversations and prove you had those conversations. That way later when they're like, this guy took off my machine and it was a false positive and we weren't, that's the way we talked about it, bruv. We had this convo. Remember our tabletop exercise we went through? Like you can use it for your own protection too. So don't miss that avenue and value statement too.
Absolutely. Well, as Matt said, we are out of time. So if you guys have any questions, pop them in the comments. I'll see if I can get Matt to answer them later. But thank you so much, Matt. Thank you so much, everyone, for watching and all
thank
your
you all
questions.
For being here.
And we'll catch you next week, Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern. Take care.